Most of the debate regarding Social Security is focused on how the system might function decades from now. The shrinking ratio of workers to retirees is expected to have a dramatic effect on the system's finances. In this report, we're going to look at Social Security, or the lack of it, decades ago. The system's origins are probably as murky for many people as its future. Producer Richard Paul examines what financial conditions were like for retired people in the years before Social Security.
In 1921, when Helen Borrett was 10, she went through a jarring change of routine. Her grandmother came to live in her family's tiny apartment in the Bronx.
We shared a room and she was always cold, and we always had to keep the window closed.
The change in lifestyle was significant, but Helen, who's 94 now, says it was pretty much expected by kids at that time.
It was not unusual for the grandparents to live with their children. I mean, it was a common thing. I was Jewish, but there were Greek families, and the same thing. It was the same thing. Italian families, it was the same thing.
In the case of her family, Helen's grandmother had just left the house that she and her husband had rented since the turn of the century. Helen's grandfather had just died in his 60s.
He had a grocery store. I think my grandfather worked until he died.
We take for granted today that someone will eventually reach retirement age and will then, in fact, retire. But not that long ago, the very concept of seniors living years of extended, enjoyable leisure was almost unheard of.
I don't recall any people retiring. No, I think they just continued until they died.
Helen Borrett's recollections are borne out by research and by references in the contemporary popular culture, like this film from the days when seniors still mostly live with their children, produced for civic groups by the Human Services Organization that was then known as the National Social Work Council.
Some are lucky. Through the continuing of their life's work, they cross the line into old age with scarcely an interruption. Most, by far, pass over the threshold into old age, into a new world of which they are only dimly aware.
Things we take for granted in old age today, like company pensions and investments, were unheard of in the years just before the Great Depression. Alice Kessler-Harris is chair of the History Department at Columbia University.
Except for a handful of companies, there was no such thing as an employee pension for most workers.
Old age is a lonely meal behind a plate glass window.
Making ends meet was tough for working people back then. The average salary for a skilled worker in 1925 was about $23 a week. That's a little under $13,000 a year in today's dollars. Many people borrowed, and while the personal savings rate was significantly higher than it is today, Alice Kessler-Harris says that still didn't amount to much.
You may be able to handle living in a boarding house, but perhaps only with terrible difficulty.
1928 was a good building year. Almost $3 billion worth of new residential construction saw the light of day.
This theatrical short from the Federal Housing Administration points out that there were, of course, some seniors who'd been able, during their productive years, to scrape together enough to buy a house.
This couple is going through a model house now. Suppose we follow them. The husband apparently isn't very keen about it all, but you know how wives are. So in they go to this delightful living room.
But home ownership was far from common. About 45% of workers owned their homes in 1920, compared with about 75% today. But break that down by class, and you find among the poorer sectors of the working population, home ownership was closer to 25%.
Well, they both would like to have this place for their very own. Too bad they can't afford it.
For those with no home and no family, as this federal government film from the early 40s suggests, the alternatives were dismal and few.
When they reached old age, they found themselves lacking the means to meet even their barest needs. And so they were forced to become wards of public charity.
The county poorhouse was still quite common in the 1920s. There, seniors with no family were thrown in with other charity cases: orphans, unwed mothers, and the mentally ill. For many older people at this time, life was indeed nasty, brutish, and short. The average lifespan for an adult male in the United States in the 1920s was 49 years. Alan Kraut is a history professor at American University in Washington, D.C., who specializes in the role of disease in public policy.
There were, of course, toxic poisonings, noxious fumes. So there were any number of things that could injure you, make you sick, shorten your work career, and perhaps even shorten your life.
There is, of course, a popular mythology about what happened next.
Something had to be done. Something was done. In 1935, Franklin D. Roosevelt put his signature on the Social Security Act.
Over the years, the story has come to be told that this hardship was the impetus behind President Roosevelt's push for Social Security. Actually, the push began about 15 years earlier. There was a movement in the 1920s to reduce the 8-hour workday to 6 to free up space for the unemployed. But this was pitted against another movement that said, keep the 8-hour day, but force people to retire at 65. This debate continued and was responsible for the creation of the first widespread company pensions, and it gained steam as unemployment skyrocketed during the Depression.
Today, a hope of many years' standing is in large part fulfilled.
On August 14, 1935, when Roosevelt signed the Social Security Act, Columbia University historian Alice Kessler Harris and others say that the first thing on his mind was not helping the elderly, but solving the problem of unemployment while simultaneously giving old people money so that they could prop up the economy.
If they had some form of income which they would spend, then they could continue to participate in the consumption society and keep the economy going.
The civilization of the past 100 years, with its startling industrial changes, has tended more and more to make life insecure.
Whatever its intended consequences, the passage of Social Security brought about mandatory retirement at a reasonable age and, for the first time, gave seniors full knowledge of where their next dollar was coming from. This resulted in the largely unintended consequences of freeing up money for travel, home ownership, and continuing education. Ironically, the increased lifespans that were made possible, to some extent, by Social Security have contributed to the program's long-term financial problems. But there's no question that the institution of Social Security created a level of prosperity and leisure that people like Helen Borrett's grandmother could not have imagined in their wildest dreams. For NPR News, I'm Richard Paul in Washington.